now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is a podcast from The Times, sports newspaper of the year.
And welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti with all the latest from a stunning weekend in the Barclays Premier League. And this week, joining me, it's Alison Rudd, it's Tony Cascarino, and from a pace we like to call George's gaff, it's George Culkin. And just when I thought we were going to be all about the football in the Barclays Premier League, the FA went and dropped a Roy Hodgson-sized bomb on proceedings. But we'll be analyzing that later. In fact, first, let's start with some football. Let's start with Wigan and Newcastle United. Even though, George, I believe you were actually at the Sunderland game, I think you're competent enough to tell us how it's possible that just when Newcastle wins six games in a row, and we're all saying it's brilliant, they go and they get their rear ends handed to them by Wigan. Wigan!
Wigan were brilliant, first of all. I've watched the match on tape.
How 1993 of you?
I live in the 1980s, Gab, as I'm sure you know. They were superb. I mean, it has to be said, they were absolutely superb from first to last. And Newcastle, amazingly, it's the same team that they played against Stoke the weekend before. They're absolutely outstanding against Stoke, and too many of their players haven't had an off day. It's quite ironic, really. They had such great publicity last week. Everybody talking about the Champions League, and then they come a cropper at Wigan. It's really one of the first times this season that we've sort of said that that's a kind of typical Newcastle moment. They have been absolutely outstanding, but they've now got a very difficult task if they're going to get into the Champions League. They're up against Chelsea this week, then Man City, and then finally the end of the season with a game at Everton. So it's going to be tough for them, but they're guaranteed of six at worst, and a place in the Europa League, which is just a really brilliant achievement by Alan Pardew and his players.
Cass, Roberto Martinez was sort of like the sophisticated choice, and like hasn't he done well, and he's elegant and whatever, and he's messed around with different formations this year, but he seems to kind of have it with this 3-4-2-1, which is a bit unusual because his wing backs are not particularly attacking wing backs. In fact, their job seems to be mostly to stop the opposition from getting much width. Mm. There's always a spare guy at the back. And he's got these two guys, I guess it was Moses and Maloney recently floating behind a striker who previously was known for the fact that he'd gone about 7 years without scoring. Is there an element to the fact, especially in this game, that because it's a weirdo formation and nobody's used to playing against, maybe teams should adjust to it more or actually figure out how to exploit it? Is that something you can throw at Newcastle or –
You're going to have to.
Is this something that can be replicated?
Well, I'll tell you what, you're going to have to adapt to it, because if you don't, they're going to roll over more teams. Because what I saw in the first half was as good a 45 minutes I've seen from nearly any team this season. They were sensational. And the movement, you were talking, Gab, about 3-4, whatever, 1-2, or whatever formation you go for. But what was so evident from Wigan, that everybody knew what they were meant to be doing. And people like Maloney were getting on the ball, they were getting the heads up. A guy that's been in and out for most of his career, as a player.
And he's not that good.
He was Saturday, and he has been in recent weeks. But also, where did the Wigan team go that was so vulnerable defensively, that gave goals away at the start of the season like you wouldn't believe? They've conceded 12 goals in the last 13 games. That's amazing. For a team that was so free... for free scoring for the opposition, because they could just get goals at will against them. And I just, what I was shocked about, how good they were defensively, how good the movement was, how good one-touch football they played, and every individual player, and you mentioned DeSanto as well, I mean, his goal, you wouldn't have dreamt that he could get a tap in from 5 yards, and now he's chipping Tim Krul from 20 yards, and everyone was full of confidence, and that's come from winning games and outplaying some of the best teams in the Premiership, and they certainly blew Newcastle away. It was an amazing performance.
But they Wigan enjoy this stage of the season. It's they're like another club. This weekend was nothing like the support you get at the start of the season.
The crowds
are low. You need the music after the goal to create an atmosphere. But come the business end, as people call it, suddenly the town becomes passionate. The team, they know they're capable of coping with the pressure of potential relegation. And it's not the first time. Last season, they started playing nice football right at the very end as well.
Well, it was not only nice, I'll say good, it was great to watch, but it was also so effective. Because Newcastle, as George alluded to earlier, that they were just absolutely blown away. Newcastle are a decent side. You know, Alan Pardew's going to get in Monday morning and think, well, we've got to put this to bed and just move on and get on with our next game, because what I saw was what he wouldn't have seen many teams do to his side in the first 45 minutes.
What I love about Wigan, and it's just, I mean, obviously Martinez was at Swansea as well. It's almost like the club has a culture. It's, you know, it's kind of like a mini Barcelona in that sense. I don't mean just in the style of football they play, but that's a big part of it, is that, you know, when players come in, they're brought in to play in that system and in that style. And Martinez has stuck to that all the way through. I mean, you know, Swansea stick to that. That's endured change of managers, and Wigan do the same thing. I mean, when it goes well, they play absolutely beautiful football. I mean, it's remarkable to think that they didn't get their second win in the Premier League until right at the very end of November, and here they are. They've given themselves a chance. They've beaten some amazing teams.
But George, I want to be Mr. Pedantic here, as is my wont, on this point. When we talk about, you know, you just mentioned that they bring people in to play in that kind of style.
Philosophy, I suppose, is the word.
Well, but you know this idea that, like, certain managers and pundits always come up with, and like, well, you know, we'd play one-touch football if we had the players, but, you know, we don't have $100 million to spend. I look at this, and frankly, you know, Emerson Boyce, your buddy Gary Caldwell, who I believe was up in the Northeast years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, these are guys who certainly the image I have of Gary Caldwell is big British lump of a center half, and yet he fits into this system. Or surely that's the image I had of him before he came and worked with Martinez. MacArthur is another one. The first time, I mean, McCarthy we always saw was skillful, but MacArthur to me looked like, you know, sort of hacker running around, Cattermole type, and yet this kind of shows that if you have a manager who has faith in you and kind of wants you to play in this way, that most players can do that. Right?
I didn't mean he only buys players who are viewed as that kind of player. What I mean is that the club has a philosophy, and everybody that comes into the club is asked to join in with that philosophy or asked to share that. And obviously that's a lot to do with how good you are as a manager, being able to do that with your players, spotting something that maybe other people haven't seen. But what I'm trying to say is that I admire the fact that if you talk in general terms about Wigan or in Swansea, we know how they play. We know, and that's something that endures.
There's an identity.
Season upon, exactly. There's an identity that endures season upon season, and he stuck to it relentlessly.
But doesn't this mean that we spoke about this on the podcast a few weeks ago, that Martinez now has to stay? Because if this is all about sticking to a philosophy and having a long-term project, and, you know, you look at the results, it was lost, and he didn't stop. He didn't say, right, let's just change what we're doing. Let's just, you know, damage limitation. Let's see if we can get out of this. Martinez was remarkable in how he kept calm. So now, everyone's raving about how beautiful they're playing. It wasn't just against Newcastle. They've been playing really, really attractive football for a few weeks now. Doesn't he have to Do people agree? I think he has to stay. I think he has to prove that he can now do it and they can finish top half.
I don't think he has to prove anything to anybody. I think
he should go to himself.
I don't think he needs to do that either. I think he needs the next good, sexy job that's offered to him. I think he should move on. I think he served his time as well. He's done it. I know he turned down Villa last year, but he is a manager, right? I mean,
I think it's so tempting to try
and
do it.
And also, and can I also say that his boss, Dave Whelan, remember when he threw that what?
He's been brilliant with him.
Oh, you think so? Remember when he threw that hissy fit where when he went public on the radio, he's like, I demand to know why, I forget who the three guys were, why they didn't start this weekend and stuff like that? You think Dave Whelan's brilliant?
Oh, I think he's been brilliant with the handling of it, yeah. Because, hold it, Gab, you can't say, a chairman sometimes can be very opinionated, as we know, and they will go, but they deal with it. He didn't sack him. He dealt with it and he went public, and he had also probably spoken to Martinez before he went public. And sometimes everyone in this country thinks that if a chairman speaks out, it's the end of the road for the manager.
I have a problem with the chairman speaking out, but in this culture, in the culture you have here, it is unusual for a chairman to come out in public and speak about a manager.
He's also praised him to the hilt. In many interviews, he's said about how great a manager Martinez is over the last few years. So
he's been saying over the weekend again that he's the best manager in Europe. I mean, I don't have a problem necessarily with intervention from upstairs in order to kind of galvanise people or shake things up a bit. I mean, I agree with Tony there. I mean, not every chairman, not every board would allow their team to lose 9 games on the spin and stick with the manager and then go through another spell of 5 or 6 games without a win as well. But I mean, Whelan's done that now this season and the last, and you know, I think he does deserve some credit for that. I mean, he does have a high public persona, which doesn't always kind of sit comfortably, but when it comes to the things that matter, he's stuck with Martinez.
I feel like we've spoken more about Wigan on this podcast than we have all season, but just one final thing on this. When we look at the, because we always talk about, you know, do you have the players for it, do you have the system, is it the manager? I look at this and I ask myself how many Wigan players could play for a top 10 side. Looking at this lineup, I've come up with 3, Figueroa, McCarthy, maybe in a year or two, and Moses if he keeps it up. Is there anybody really, really good who plays for Wigan that I've missed out?
El Habsi.
With the goalkeeper from Oman.
He's a very good keeper.
Yeah, I know. I was joking there, yeah.
I think, Gab, as you were talking before that, I was thinking, how many players would you value at 5 million for Wigan?
Alcaraz. It is remarkable.
Moses, I mean, he'd gone nowhere since his move from Crystal Palace to Wigan. Yeah. He achieved very little and very few goals. And this year, or especially in the last few weeks, he's shown his real qualities.
All right, enough Wigan for the season. Let's move on to Chelsea and QPR, thereby restoring our London bias. Because, as you know, I think it was last week that we didn't deal with a single Southern club.
Why couldn't I have been on last week?
What? This is a good point. Well, let's start with you, actually, George. Fernando Torres gets a hat trick. I know that you've been incredibly preoccupied with the Fernando Torres issue. So please tell us, is he back?
Well, I mean, if I say yes now, then I'm too late. I mean, it's just like everyone...
That's the idea.
Since the first game that he stopped scoring, everyone has said, or not everyone, but people have been trying to be the first person to say, we spy signs of him being back. But it was great. Look, it was just great watching the game yesterday and being reminded about what a great finisher he is and what a good centre-forward he is. I'm kind of pleased. I mean, it's you know, from a completely neutral point of view, watching from afar, it's been painful to watch him sometimes, and having watched the Champions League game in midweek, you know, you could just see what a huge personal professional lift, relief and release that was for him, and you sort of just see, you know, you see the confidence and form flow back into him. It's quite remarkable, really. I mean, the drought went on, the more difficult it was, I think, to see it coming back, because it just felt unsustainable. But you know, it was a pleasure to see him playing like that yesterday, and then, you know, to even have a whisper of a smile on his face, really good, because You know, he showed at Liverpool he can be a joyous footballer.
And you notice how I asked you about Torres and not the two biased Liverpool fans in the studio here. Biased Liverpool fans, you want to weigh in on Torres?
Yeah, please, thanks. No, I think it's a hugely ironic situation that most of his time at Chelsea, Torres has had quite a lot of praise for being a good team player and for opening up the game for his teammates. He may have been lacking confidence as a striker, but his work rate was good and it was improving. And he was actually playing well in that sense. And the goal that's turned it around for him came at the Nou Camp because he was playing really, really badly, and he was way up the pitch, and he should have been helping out defensively. He was all over the place. It was probably his worst performance in terms of helping the team out. Gives him a chance to have nobody near him, so he just about rounds a very, very poor keeper to score a goal. But he scored a goal in Nou Camp. Everyone, he's a headline man, and that, not his great footballing skills in the previous 8 months, but that is what gives him the confidence to then become the striker again. I think it's hugely ironic.
Well, Cass, just to wrap up Torres, he's had three different managers at Chelsea. I know for a fact that every single one of them is surprised that he hasn't gone and complained to the press or planted stories via his friends, etc., about not getting enough playing time. That in fact, he's just shut up, accepted the fact that he's played badly, obviously wants to do more. Are you surprised? How unusual is it? I mean, having been obviously a striker and a professional yourself, and I'm assuming there were times when you played badly and didn't get enough as much playing time. Have you ever? Is it difficult to? Is it even praiseworthy that you know that he didn't complain about it since he is getting paid all this money, or is it actually something that we should take as a given?
Well, from my personal experience, is that the reason when I went through some droughts, and I had a few, and I had a dreaded one in Scotland for playing for Celtic. I never went to the media or never really spoke out against, you know, what other people weren't doing. It's probably because I was more critical of myself than anybody. So I took up my own shoulders that I was the real main problem. And I'd like to think Fernando Torres is not a typical stereotype footballer that we all assume is just all about their own ego and about how brilliant they can be if everything else is working for him. I think he's had to reflect on himself. And he's been, of anyone who's watched him, and we all have over the last, six, 7 years, he's a talented guy that has fallen way short of what his standards should be, because we know he can finish. We know he's got a turn of foot. He's got ability more than most centre forwards in the Premiership, and yet he's fallen way below them standards. I actually personally felt that when Spain won the Euros, I thought he was suffering then. The way he played with David Villa, he got left out of the team. He never looked quite right. And I think it's taken him a long time and reflect on in his own game to get him back. Is he back? He's going to have to do it over a course of a season. It's not just the last few weeks. It's going to still take a lot more.
But he did whinge, Gab. He did whinge. He did say that the Chelsea team were too old and he wasn't getting enough people passing to him.
That was the one interview where then later he came out with this whole thing that it was misquoted and twisted. And so Chelsea's press office said, oh, that never happened. You're just imagining it. Nothing to see here and so on. But, I mean, beyond that, certainly people thought in the dressing room it would be more, he would be more of an issue because, you know, he is the big star and who eventually got dumped to the bench. I want to ask about John Terry here. He issued an apology in the, I know, we're all smiling and so on, but he issued an apology for getting sent off in the Chelsea program. George, assuming this was John Terry's idea, and let's face it, we can't have it both ways. We can't, on the one hand, all giggle at Chelsea, like, look, John Terry runs the club, and then at the same time say, oh, no, look, the club made him do it. Are you impressed with the fact that he comes out and apologizes for getting himself sent off and potentially costing Chelsea a place in the final? Is it big of a footballer to go and do that so publicly? And then, of course, he apologized after scoring as well.
I'm reluctant to say anything nice about John Terry.
Oh, there you go. Is there anybody here prepared to say anything nice about John Terry? Alison, can you give the man some credit for asking forgiveness?
Okay.
Or not?
If this big apology means he changes the person he is and he doesn't insist on lifting the trophy should they win it in the Allianz, and if he should clean up his act and try to be a more honourable person, then great, fantastic. But I doubt it very much.
Look, I mean, let's be rigorously fair. He did the apology in the programme. He scored a goal after scoring his goal against QPR. He kind of, you know, it was like an apology of a goal celebration in some ways. And, you know, he played well in the team performance a few days after what must be the, you know, arguably one of the two or three biggest disappointments of his career. So I'll give him some credit for that.
Thank you, George. Easy, reasonable people from the Northeast. Talk about something not reasonable, which is QPR's performance.
Wow.
I'm trying to remember a team going out there and being so bad. It's like they were frozen. Or you probably remember.
I know a team this weekend that were worse than QPR away from home. Blackburn.
Much worse they were, yeah.
Yeah, but we're not.
Didn't concede six, but wow.
Okay, but let's talk QPR rather than Blackburn, since Blackburn are managed by Steve Keane.
You remember a team, and I've just said
this is
Blackburn.
True. This is true, but I would argue that QPR have rather more resources and certainly a manager of whom we expect a lot more than you know, the Steve Keane whose drink gets spiked. What happened? I presume, like, I mean, and take us there.
Have you seen their record though? I mean, it's like, I mean, I saw them.
It's wins and losses, isn't it?
Yeah, away from home. They you know, in the last couple of months.
Stamford Bridge isn't very far away from home.
No, I know, but it looks like more than a coincidence. You know, they lose at Bolton, they win at home to Liverpool, they lose to Sunderland. I saw that game; they were absolutely dreadful. They then beat Arsenal. They lose at Man U. Fair enough. They then beat Swansea. I mean, the QPR game, the Chelsea game comes after they've just beaten Tottenham at home, and yet, you know, yesterday there's, you know, I watched the game and there's just nothing there, absolutely nothing, no fight, no spirit, no interest, no impetus, no, you know, no sort of sense of what they're, you know, of what they're up against. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you know, the day before I saw Bolton at Sunderland, and they're making a real fist of it. It's almost, you know, it's almost inexplicable the way their performances and results are sort of diverging home and away.
You say it's almost inexplicable. I bet Cascarino has a theory.
No, well, the theory is that, I mean, what a great opportunity for QPR to go and play at Chelsea after the Champions League. The games they've played Tottenham in the semi-final of the Cup. They've had Barcelona twice. You'd think that we've had the week off. We can absolutely prepare brilliantly for our West London derby rivals, and we can try and make a game of it. And they just... Mark Hughes, wherever we, you know, that he takes them down or stays up, there'll be a lot of players gone from that football club. I mean, Djibril Cissé could score in a goal when they were 6-1 or 6-0 down, or and he's celebrating like as if it, you know, you just typified the ego stereotype we was talking about earlier. That, to me, I just couldn't get it. And QPR were just... I didn't see anything from Joey Barton, from Djibril Cissé. Bobby Zamora was poor.
What did you say about Joey Barton?
Well,
one ex-pro has been critical of Barton.
I don't care.
I
don't care.
Go ask Matt Holland.
I don't care. Joey Barton looked like he was playing with slippers on, because he didn't. He really did not make.
Joey, I'm disassociating myself from this man. Okay, just note that it's only Cascarino who feels this way. Nobody else.
Another theory is I think. At QPR, they've overstressed how important their home form is going to be in the run in towards escaping relegation. And
as you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Often enough, you start believing it. I think they go out at home thinking they're in with a chance because they're at home. And when they go away, they think, well, it's all right, we're going to rely on our home form. They don't seem to think that it's a complete campaign. It's ridiculous.
Just to wrap up QPR, anybody want to give me percentage chance that they stay up? Cascarino.
Well, like we touched on earlier, they could probably go and beat Stoke at home and give them a fighting chance.
So what percentage chance they stay up?
After what I saw this weekend, probably 30-35%.
Alison?
Yeah, sounds about right.
George?
Well, percentages, 18.6 recurring. I mean, I think they will beat Stoke because I think that's just the way they've been. And then they're at Man City on the last day and I can't see them getting anything there. So it just depends on everybody else's results. But I wouldn't put any money on them, that's for certain.
Well, there you go. A lot of love for Bolton here then coming out by your answers. But Skinner's asked us, since Chelsea are playing Newcastle on Wednesday, to make some predictions. Let's not make predictions. Let's instead try to hypothesize about how the game will go, which essentially is making predictions, but in a more expressing the same concept in a more pretentious way. Alison, Chelsea have obviously they've got to rotate a lot. They'll be thinking about Liverpool and the FA Cup at the weekend. They rotated
well, that's
this
the
week.
Question. That's the question. What is the more important game for Chelsea? Is it the FA Cup final or is it getting that for a chance to get that fourth spot? I suspect that the club believe it's more important to finish fourth, actually. And so I don't think there'll be massive new names coming through, people off the bench. I don't think I see Sam Hutchinson starting, for example, for Chelsea. I think they'll play a strong team, thinking beyond the FA Cup final, and I think Chelsea will win.
Then again, Chelsea have such a big squad.
Exactly.
And frankly, there isn't, I mean, apart from Mata, perhaps, and one or two others, it's not like there's a huge drop-off when somebody else comes in.
Well, I tell you, it's pretty obvious, and it's happened year in, year out for a number of years, that team selection and supposedly your second-string striker, midfielder, whatever, they come in, they do jobs, and a lot of times they get results. And like was proved yesterday with Chelsea getting six, you know, against QPR, and a lot of them players haven't played. People like Sturridge come in, done a job, got a goal, you know, and that often proves the way that second team players or supposedly can come in and absolutely keep you to a level and sometimes even better.
George, Pardew doesn't really rotate much because he doesn't have the giant squad. So how do you see this? How do you see this approach? I mean, is it as simple as telling his guys, "Hey, you want to play in the Champions League next year? Get a result at Stamford Bridge."
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and the strength of their position, if that's what you want to call it, is that they've already got sixth place at worst. They've already got the Europa League, so they can afford to just go out and really attack it. That's the word that he uses. They can't be taken over in that sense. So I think they have to go for it. One of the strengths this season is that, by and large, when they've had a disappointment, they've bounced back from it pretty effectively. I don't think many people will give them a chance of going to Stamford Bridge and getting something. But why can't they sneak a draw?
There you go. What I'm fascinated by is going to be, as we said, this rotation and how Di Matteo plays it, because logic suggests that if it's one game on, one game off, then these same guys who played QPR will take on Liverpool in the FA Cup final, and the, for lack of a better word, you know, starters will play Newcastle on Wednesday night. All right, time now for our debate. Now, our producer Chris Skinner and I had an entirely different idea to debate this week, but of course, once again, the FA have ruined it for us by making the announcement that West Brom have given them permission to speak to Roy Hodgson, and leaking the news that they're interviewing Roy Hodgson on Monday. I want to take a step back perhaps here and kind of state the obvious, that does anybody believe that since the departure of Fabio Capello, they've just kind of sat there and waited for permission to speak to Roy Hodgson?
Oh.
No, but I mean, I would give them I try not to be too cynical about this thing. Maybe they've waited to see how things pan out at all the various clubs, trying their best not to disrupt club seasons. Now, I know people would then laugh about what's happened at Tottenham perhaps over the last few weeks, but you know, West Brom are now in a secure position. They're not going to get caught up in relegation. They're in mid-table. So looking at it, charitably, perhaps that's what they've been thinking.
That implies, by definition, the FA could only ever appoint a manager of a mediocre team, because if you want to appoint someone by now, as opposed to when the season is completely over, you can't appoint somebody who's successful.
Yeah, but you don't. I mean, they're not always looking for a manager in the middle of a season, are they? But yeah, I mean, you know, I don't see it as a huge surprise. It's not like it's not, you know, when they announced it, it's not like you're sort of choking on your supper last night. Roy.
Well, maybe Harry Redknapp was.
Perhaps, yeah. Perhaps.
I mean, the indication we have is that he was quite upset by this, or certainly surprised, and not in a positive way. I guess we're going to get to Hodgson, but I'm sorry, I still need to beat the FA with a stick a little bit longer, because it's still unconscionable to me that, you know, your previous manager would depart. So was it 2.5 months ago? Yeah. And for 2.5 months, if we are to believe them, they haven't spoken to anybody about the job. They say that he's the only manager that they've talked to, which means to me they haven't even talked to Harry Redknapp. Now, in the real world, we assume that this is not the case, because if it is, then it would mean that they really are a freak show.
I think what's probably happened, Gab, is that there's been lots of meetings about potential candidates, and I think there's probably a lot of disagreement in the meetings, but to do with the FA on the committee.
Between who? Like Alex Horne and his master?
Well, how many of them? I don't know how many numbers are there.
But the FA board, you mean?
Well, I'm sure across the board, everybody involved would have had, you know, they would have had meetings about potential candidates, and then they decide.
Why
from
didn't
there.
They figure out who they wanted before they sacked Capello?
I think there was a lot of uncertainty, Gab. I think there's a real, and I think that's been typified by the wait, the 2.5 month wait, and then everybody assumed it was Harry, and yet from Harry to the FA, there was not really much coming back. There's obviously a lot of major issues, which I think there's a lot of obvious ones. You know, the way that the FA are wanting to move, they've spent £85 million on St George's Park in Burton, and they want a guy that can not only be the England manager, but can be on the technical side from, you know, developing that and playing a big part in that. I think there was lots of issues to do with the
They are peddling that line that obviously Roy Hodgson lives in the Midlands or is happy to live in the Midlands, whereas Harry insists on living in Sandbank. So that's one of the factors that makes Roy more attractive, Alison. And since we're moving on to this, I've heard a lot of people talk about, well, he has international experience with Finland and Switzerland. Does international experience actually matter when considering a job like the England job?
Well, if you're planning,
because obviously most managers won't have international experience before.
Yeah. Well, you see, the problem is the FA is all tied up with red tape and blazers and committees. And what they should have done when they fell out with Capello, it wasn't a straightforward sacking. Capello didn't like what the FA done to him, and they didn't like the way he reacted. It was a breakdown.
And so they sacked him.
It was a breakdown. I think Capello was happy to go in that instance.
I don't think so.
Well, what was his choice? Anyway, at that point, what the FA should have done, and they are incapable, they are organically incapable of doing, what they should have done was say immediately, Harry, your country needs you. We're not going to muck about with Spurs or anything. We just want you to say, come the Euros, you'll take charge. Just short term. We think you're a fantastic. The players love you. You're a great man manager. Just do it for your country for this one tournament. And Harry would have said, all right. And there wouldn't have been any contract problems with Spurs. It would have been just having the summer to do it, and it
so
would have been
words,
fine. And
Gavin, just to clarify what you're saying. So, in other words, you're not signing Harry long term. You're basically asking Spurs for permission to quote unquote borrow Harry for the duration of the tournament. Obviously, pay Harry some money, a little bit like what's happened in the past, like what Scotland did, I think, with Sir Alex in 1986. That's what you're suggesting.
Exactly what they should have done, because there's no point now going through the let's think long term about what the new St George's Park means, about long term planning means. the immediate point is the Euros, and then you start thinking about the long term planning, and then Roy becomes a realistic option because he fits in very nicely with the FA, and they'll be able to work. It'll be a workable relationship, but the way it's evolved, it's a joke because they've allowed everyone to assume that Harry's getting the job. They've allowed players to tweet that they want him. They've allowed the newspapers to say what a great manager he'll be. They've allowed that to happen, not said a word. They seem to think they should get praise for being very quiet. It's the opposite. They've allowed a situation to where bookies stop taking money on Harry, and then they come out with Roy, and that undermines Roy, who's a very nice chap, by the way, but it undermines him completely because, you know, most average football fans will think he's second choice. Why is he there? And that's not how you start your new job as England manager.
I mean, I agree, actually, with a lot of that. But if you look at it from the FA's perspective, say, for example, they'd gone for Redknapp short term. England do better than we anticipate at the Euros. Say they get to their quarters, the semi-finals, but they play good football. Everything's on a high. And then there's a kind of a huge... clamour for Redknapp to stay on. It'd be very difficult for them at that point to go for somebody else. And I think, you know, both of you mentioned St. George.
Sorry, George, but it would also be very difficult for Redknapp to walk away. I mean, if that scenario happens, you negotiate with Spurs.
What I was going to say was, I mean, everyone's mentioned St. George's Park, and I think that's important because that is coming on stream. It's coming on stream imminently, and that is a huge part of what the FA are looking at going forward. I had a tour around it a few weeks ago. I know loads of people have. As a little aside, by the way, the new the room in the complex that the England manager will be staying in. Everyone on the camp nicknamed that Harry's room, which is kind of just a little sort of funny little thing about what they thought might happen. But going forward, is Harry Redknapp the kind of man who's going to preside over a seminar of coaches, for example, at St George's Park? Now, I might be doing the man a gross injustice, but I can't see that. I can see Roy Hodgson doing that. I can see him being involved in all of that root and branch thing. Now, the England first team, of course, is absolutely the standard bearer for the whole thing, and it's vitally important that they get the right man, full stop. But they do want the new man to sort of buy into that whole philosophy. Yes. And I can see Roy Hodgson, I can see Roy Hodgson in a coaching seminar in Switzerland talking French to other coaches, talking about coaching licenses. Now, I'm not saying that's what I think is the be-all and end-all, because I don't. But
George, on this point, though, didn't they come on? Didn't they come on with this whole song and dance like 3 weeks ago about appointing a technical director who's going to do the seminars and run the coaching and speak French in Switzerland and all that jazz? Has this all gone out the window now? Because Roy Hodgson can do both.
I don't know. I didn't hear that. I mean, but
wait, when you do, sorry, you didn't hear it when they talked about the technical director thing?
No, I don't pay attention to anything, Gab. Why? I'm just doing this absolutely off the top of my head. Why would? when have I ever given you any information that I do anything else?
I didn't dream this though. This technical director stuff, right? I remember writing an article for this very newspaper about that. This did happen, right? 3 weeks ago, they announced they were going to go for the technical director.
Well, they might have him as the manager first, and then, if it goes badly wrong in the Euros, they'll use him as a technical director after.
It's Roy Hodgson, technical director, and Stuart Pearce, manager. It's the dream team. Surely everybody can see that.
I think there's a lot of people in the media who have got a huge respect for Roy Hodgson, and like him a lot. I think it's twofold. I think that the people, the journalists, the media guys, pundits, whoever, there's a lot of time for both of them, and I just think there's one downside to Roy is the style of football. I think the fans on the street look at it as more adventurous with Harry, and there are people in the media that do. And, would I go and see Roy Hodgson's team? I don't get inspired by watching them play. And that's not just at Liverpool or West Brom or Fulham. But I respect him hugely as a coach who produces sides that are very difficult to beat 9 times out of 10. Just one side is that I just don't think that the man in the street really wants to see an England team be quite conservative. I think they've had enough of that. And that's only my gut feeling.
Alison, our boss, Tony Evans, came out and basically made the point in his column today that they're both bad options, but that Hodgson is a worse option than Redknapp. Is that a view you share ultimately that these are two not very good options for the England team?
No, I mean, given that the FA didn't do what I thought they should do, the time,
which was a point red Knapp
immediately,
right?
In a let's do it in the summer. Since then, you know, Redknapp has had a serious heart surgery. He's had a very draining and public court case, and he's seen his club side falter, and there are rumours of, you know, losing the dressing room and so on. And so right now, today, Redknapp looks a far less attractive option. He looks a tired man who could probably do with a sabbatical, not taking the England job. Whereas Roy Hodgson, in his favour, is, although he's mid-60s, his energy and enthusiasm for football is really quite phenomenal. He speaks five languages,
infectious.
He's intelligent. And above all else, he's an Englishman who regards it as his duty and the ultimate honour, and he's always hankered after it to be England manager. And I think, in some ways, those are qualities we ought to embrace.
All right, time now for some quick hits. Harry Redknapp hinted ahead of Spurs' 2-0 win over Blackburn that Gareth Bale and Luka Modric might have their heads turned in the summer. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone. But Alison, if you were Daniel Levy and there was a gun to your head, which of the two would you sacrifice? The tall, handsome Welshman or the short, stubby Croatian?
It's close, but on balance, I'd sacrifice Modric, who's been a little flaky about commitment anyway. I feel Bale would just be a bigger loss to the club in terms of what he means to them and the fans and the style of play. And if they're in Europe, he really does make opposition European defences tremble. So I'd keep Bale and cash in on Modric.
Bolton battled their way to a 2-2 draw at Sunderland. George, you were there. You've waxed lyrical about Kevin Davies in the past, and in particular, I believe, about his buttocks. give me three positives that make you believe Bolton are staying up.
I'm going to have to very quickly tell that story, otherwise I'm going to get in trouble. But yes, Bolton were at Newcastle a few weeks ago. It was a terrible game until Ben Arthur scored that wonderful goal. I indulged in some creative writing on Twitter, talked about Kevin Davies breaking into a jog, his buttocks quivering. I got an outraged tweet from none other than Emma Davies, Kevin's wife, informing me that Kevin's buttocks have never quivered and, in fact, are made of rock in capital letters. So I've been very nice about Kevin Davies ever since. The reason I think they'll stay up is that they're actually playing some decent stuff. They've got some momentum behind them. Other teams are playing really badly. They have a game in hand. And, of course, they've got Kevin Davies's tectonic-like, Titanic-plated buttocks.
There you go. I asked for three reasons. He gave me four. Brilliant. That's what you get with George Culkin. A hard-fought point for Arsenal at Stoke. Cats looking at their run-in. There's pretty much seals Champions League football, right? Mm. And also, do you think this ugliness with Ramsey and Shawcross, and yes, I am blaming to some degree both sets of fans, will end in the foreseeable future, or do either or both of these people need to retire?
Hopefully. I can't see it going on. I didn't think it was as bad as what was been put by the media, and I don't know. I just look at it. I mean, the lads had a serious injury. Both managers are uncomfortable with it. I'm sure the players have moved on. And by next year, I don't think you'll hear a murmur. I hope so. And as for Arsenal, yep, guaranteed fourth now, or top four for me. And in an amazing season. Just so many troughs, and, you know, the dips have just been incredible. And then they've just bounced back. So Arsenal doing what they're always good at is finding the start and the end of the season is really good.
Luis Suarez scores a hat-trick as Liverpool flat Norwich 3-0. Alison, it's a great day, isn't it? But why can't he do this every week? And also, if he'd been playing like this all season long, where would Liverpool be? How many dozens of points of a lead at the top of the table would they have?
Oh, many dozens. Well, he doesn't do it every week because he doesn't come across defences as tired and naive as that Norwich defence was every week. Also, his style of play has been for Liverpool traditionally more, he opens it up and allows other people in to score. I mean, they hit the post, but that's been the the way he sort of he creates the space for someone else, because his close control is amazing. If there hadn't been the horrible racism row, I think he'd have reached this point much earlier in his Liverpool career. That obviously was debilitating. And yes, Liverpool would be much higher up in the league if he'd been on this form for longer. Evidently,
top four.
They've not been putting away chances, Liverpool, and they needed someone.
Top four?
absolutely.
Top two?
Absolutely. Suarez,
top
I mean, the sad thing about the hat trick, which I wrote in the paper today, is it just reminded you that Suarez actually was on course to be the player of the season. This is the man who was lighting up the Premier League, and it all went wrong.
Robin
He's a phenomenal
Persie.
Player.
Thanks you for recognising his achievements this year.
He would have been. Gab, a question for you. Pep Guardiola won't be back as Barcelona manager next season. Could you please put his achievements in context?
Yeah, I think this four-year stint, which he won 13 trophies, including two Champions League titles and three Liga titles and possibly another Copa del Rey, is probably as good a stint as any 4 years of any manager in the history of football has ever had. He didn't just play phenomenal football and break records. He also very much cemented the Barcelona brand and a certain philosophy of playing. He was a perfect salesman for that. I think it's very difficult for people to dislike what was achieved there in those 4 years. And I find it fascinating that somebody would have the introspection to go and just walk away in that context and effectively take his sabbatical. And whether he returns and tries to do this somewhere else, I think that's one of the great imponderables of football, whether this could even be rebuilt somewhere else. If he ever manages to have another four-year stint like that somewhere else, then I think he will definitely be in the conversation as being the greatest ever. All right, enough yakking for this week. But before I let you go, a quick reminder that we're doing another live roadshow with me and some very, very special guests. It's going to be at the Freemasons Arms. It's right near Covent Garden in the heart of London. It's going to be on May 29th from 7 p.m. And you can book your tickets at www.timestickets.co.uk or you can call 0871-620-4025. And it only costs £7.50 per person. Hope to see you all there. Now, you can go to thetimes.co.uk for all your news, your gossip, your analysis. You can follow us all on Twitter. We're pretty much all on there, except for you, Cass, right? Your Twitter's account's kind of dormant, yes?
I'm not a tweeter.
But Calk in the Times, a very, very funny account. I recommend you you drop in there. Till next week, bye-bye.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.